A chill in the air at climate change talks.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us this Friday morning. Glad you're with us for the morning open. A look at the economy as we get the last day of the business week going and stocks trading today. First, we're going to ask, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now. The S&P up about 0.5%. The Dow the same, about 46 points at 10,354. The NASDAQ up more than 1% right now at 2205. Positive reading on German business confidence is giving stocks a boost in Europe. Shares are up mostly there. And in Asia, the Hang Seng and Nikkei both were off less than 1%. The UN summit will wrap up today in Copenhagen. World leaders have been trying to come up with a deal to combat climate change. President Obama arrived there today and addressed the conference.
America is going to continue on this course of action to mitigate our emissions and to move towards a clean energy economy, no matter what happens here in Copenhagen. We think it is good for us as well as good for the world.
All right, let's get some analysis this morning from Diane Swank, chief economist at Mesirow Financial. She's with us live from Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So the president sounds awfully determined that there's going to be a shift in energy policy here in the United States. Is that good or bad for the economy?
Well, it's going to be both. Unfortunately, it's one of these things where it's two steps forward, one step back. I hope this is a difficult time to push shifts in energy policy when we only have $70 per barrel oil instead of $147 per barrel oil. It's much easier to get people to shift when the cost of burning carbon is much higher.
Let's head on over to Copenhagen right now, Diane. Come along with me, shall you?
Sure.
And Marketplace's Stephen Beard is there, and he's been there throughout the conference with us live right now. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Steve.
And the president had this meeting today with the Chinese premier. What do we know about what happened there?
Well, the AP news agency is quoting a White House official saying the two men have moved a step forward toward a possible deal. But we shouldn't get too excited about this. It seems pretty clear there are still a lot of disagreements between the two sides. The Chinese are stoutly resisting American demands that developing countries accept some sort of monitoring to make sure they curb their emissions.
And why are they so resistant to that, Stephen?
They say it's an issue of national sovereignty. They don't like the idea of foreign inspectors coming into their factories.
So what kind of agreement do you think we'll see at the end of this thing?
Well, not a legally binding one, that's for sure. It's going to be what is being described as a political declaration. This declaration, the UN hopes, will be turned into a legal text for a treaty to be finalized next year. What is essential, though, is for this to be a clear declaration of commitment and not just a sort of pious statement of good intentions.
Mm. All right. Marketplace's Stephen Beard with us live in Copenhagen. Stephen, great work, sir. Thank you.
Okay, Steve.
And, of course, be sure to check out Marketplace with Kai Rizdahl later today for more coverage from Copenhagen. Back to Diane Swank. Diane, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about the Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke's reconfirmation. The Senate Banking Committee narrowly approved it, and now it goes to the Senate. Was there ever any doubt?
You know, it did actually get to some doubt yesterday. They weren't sure at all that they would even narrowly approve it, which is really kind of despicable given all of those who voted against him said, he did as best he could and we don't know anyone else we'd support. So what are we going to have, no Fed chairman? This is politics, 2010 election year politics coming into play. Democrats and Republicans alike did vote against him, and in the Senate it's going to be a tough, he could get as many as 30 no votes, which is twice what Volcker got in his heyday. That's really unbelievable at this stage of the game.
We shall see. Diane Swank joining us from Chicago. Diane, have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you. General Motors said today it couldn't get a deal going with the luxury Dutch carmaker Spyker, so GM's Saab emblem will fade away. GM says it will honor all warranties for Saab. Thank you. Marketplace Morning Report for Friday, December 18th, 2009, at marketplace.org. The Blue Humanoids are coming today. The movie Avatar opens in theaters, and with a budget above $300 million, can the movie really make money? Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
You're not in Kansas anymore. You're on Pandora.
Some estimates put the price tag for Avatar at $500 million. That would make it the most expensive movie of all time. Around $150 million went into marketing alone.
You could not be alive on much of planet Earth without knowing this thing is coming.
Robert Thompson is a professor of media and pop culture at Syracuse University. He says mega marketing efforts like these almost guarantee a mega opening.
It may turn out that the real artistic achievement of Avatar is the way that it was packaged, sold, and marketed.
But even if Avatar ultimately disappoints at the U.S. box office, it doesn't really matter, says Paul DeGarabedian of Hollywood.com.
The key to Avatar's success is its performance in the international arena.
DeGarabedian says the U.S. used to make up about half of a film's total box office revenue. Now, for big-budget movies like Avatar, it's only about a third. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The recession's done a number on small business. Owners are pinching as many pennies as they can. That includes employee bonuses. You know what they're not pulling back on? Swag to clients. From the Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Just one in three small business owners will give bonuses or gifts to their employees this year, according to a recent survey by American Express. That's down more than 10% since 2008. But there's one thing employers can't afford to skimp on, says Amex small business advisor Alice Braden, gifts for customers.
Giving to customers is a marketing must. If you don't give to customers and thank them, there may not be any employee bonuses or gifts to even talk about this time next year.
But Braden says it's a delicate balancing act to shortchange employees while spending on clients.
If you don't openly address the fact that you're cutting back on what you're doing with your employees, they are going to be really upset with you, particularly if they're seeing you spending money and putting energy into thanking customers. They're going to say, hey, what about us?
Braden suggests giving employees time off or other non-cash perks to keep spirits up. And she says tone down the flash factor on those customer gifts. Instead of imported scotch or a fancy paperweight, give some of your own merchandise or services. Marketing expert Joseph Heinen at Genesis Telecom Labs says gifts aren't what builds customer loyalty anyway.
They're not necessarily focused on something that was dropped in their office or a card or a thank you, so much as their experience when they actually transacted business or resolved a problem.
Bill McHenry realized that after years of giving out customized mugs and other tchotchkes at Pedal Power, his bike shop in Middletown, Connecticut.
We did little gifts and things like that, and they have that immediate hand to the customer, and they say, oh, thank you, and appreciate it. But we found that doing things like events seemed to have a greater impact.
McHenry now throws a few big parties for customers every year. He also sends them personalized discount offers based on the type of cycling they do. And even though business wasn't great this year, he'll give his 12 employees the same bonuses as last year, ranging from $50 to a few $100s. He says he wants them to know their efforts are appreciated, especially when times are hard. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
France isn't saying je t'aime to Google. Paris courts found the search behemoth guilty of copyright infringement. The case involved Google's efforts to put books online. We're going to get the latest from Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson. He's with us live from New York this morning. Good morning, Jeremy.
Bonjour, Steve.
Bonjour. First, tell us a little bit about this case.
Well, Google was sued by a French Publishers Association. The association charged that Google was taking books, scanning them into digital form, and then putting them up online, allowing users to browse through either the entire books or snippets of them. And then, like everything else Google does, make money from advertisers, but not compensating the authors or the publishers of those books.
So what's the punishment from the French court then?
Well, it doesn't sound like a lot for a behemoth like Google, but it's a $430,000 fine and about $14,000 every day that Google doesn't take down the digitized version of the French books. But I spoke with copyright expert Lawrence Lessig at Harvard Law School. He says he thinks the French court is moving backwards here, that this will keep, yes, the big name authors off of Google, but also the 75% of books for which he says it's difficult to even identify who holds the copyright.
If you focus exclusively upon the John Grishams of the world, then you will obliterate the vast majority of our cultural past. And the problem with the French decision is it's going to turn the digital libraries of the future into digital bookstores. And that, I think, will be an enormous loss to culture.
Now, Google, Steve, Google says it plans to appeal the French decision. So this is not the end of the story.
All right. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson in New York. Jeremy, thanks.
Thank you.
Finally, it's a new program to offer travel information. The Ohio Transportation Department's encouraging motorists to use Twitter this winter to report icy roads and accidents. The project will work in six of Ohio's biggest cities. Officials there hoping a bunch of people tweeting on their smartphones in the ice and snow won't make the roads even more hazardous. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.